today, there might be some out traveling or not coming to church here, but maybe somewhere else. But I feel like we probably have about as good a crowd as I've seen in this room for quite a long time. Well, today is the 4th of July, as it's been. One of my biggest struggles is figuring out what I'm going to talk about. And when I looked at the layout of I was supposed to speak on this day, I thought, well, that kind of limits the amount of things I'm going to talk about. Today we're going to talk about the independence of the United States. It's the 250th celebration, the anniversary of the United States. If you're thinking of a starting point of the United States, where would you think about? Would you think about 1776 on this day when independence? Would you think about the fighting between the British and the American colonists that happened prior to that and the freedom that they fought for? God thought about America, Genesis. Can you believe that? Shows the magnificence of God that he thought about things. And so exactly, just amazing that he did that. Genesis 48 and 49 is where it talks of two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. And we're going to look at that today. We're going to see the mighty magnificence of God as he knew way back then that he was going to make our nation great. Before we go there, though, and I know you're all turning to Genesis 48 and 49 because I hear the pages rattling, but we're going to go back, turn to 1 Chronicles Chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Now, Genesis, where we go in Genesis 48, it's going to start with Jacob. He would be at his dying days. He's getting blind. And Jacob is to give blessings. He had 12 sons. We all know that. He had 12 sons, and he was going to give blessings to these sons. And he had a lot of blessings to give out. Because Abraham, his grandfather, received a lot of blessings, which he held, and Isaac, his father, and now him. And so, in tradition, what happens as a father is to put blessings on his children, he would take his firstborn first, and he would say, to you, I grant this. And it always was much more than it to anybody else. But 1 Chronicles Chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel. Reuben was the firstborn of Jacob. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, he was indeed the firstborn, but because he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph. And that's very telling. Not only to Joseph, it says given to the sons of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh, it was given to from Reuben, the son of Israel, so that the genealogy is not listed according to the birthright. That's very revealing. Verse 2, yet Judah prevailed over his brothers, and from him came a ruler, although the birthright was Joseph's. And that's interesting too, because there is in history in the Bible the birthright, the firstborn birthright, but there's also what's called the scepter promise to the sons of Israel. Judah received the scepter promise, and in that scepter promise, it says, from him came a ruler, not just any ruler, the ruler Jesus Christ. Although the birthright was to Joseph's. He, Jesus Christ, was a descendant of the tribe of Judah. We all know that. He was a descendant of the tribe of Judah. And he, we're going to read of Abraham, his descendants were to be a blessing to the world. What is the biggest blessing that was ever given to the world? Jesus Christ's death. He died for the sins of the world so everyone could have a chance to live the right way of life. And this ruler that we're looking at here, this ruler is not just any ruler, but it is Jesus Christ. And he will rule as king on this earth at the time of the millennium. So we see those two little things. Let's go back now to Genesis 48. Genesis 48. Starting in verse 1, you were there before, and then you made me. Then I made you turn to somewhere else, and now you got to go back again. But that's all right, because I got to travel that distance too. Okay. Genesis 48, verse 1. Now it came to pass after these things that Joseph was told, indeed, your father is sick. And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. I look at that and I wonder, was there an angel told him to take his sons? Father was sick. Joseph was the most loved. But you would think he would just go by himself. But he didn't. He took his two sons. That's very revealing. And those two sons, it says, were Manasseh and Ephraim. I'm just going to jump ahead in history so it isn't so vague to us. Most of us realize Manasseh, in Bible prophecy, is America. Ephraim, in Bible prophecy, is England, and not only England, but what's called the British Commonwealth, the many nations that England brought into the fold of this British Commonwealth. So as we go through it, you have that in your mind as we run through this, these prophecies at this time. The title of my message is God's Blessings on Joseph's Sons. God's blessings on Joseph's sons. There were tremendous blessings that were going to be poured out here. Let's go down to verse 5. And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you in Egypt, this is Israel talking, or Jacob talking. Jacob says, now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, Joshua, who were born to you in the land of Egypt, before I came to you in Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. It's not that Joseph was now here on the parallel with Reuben, Simeon, Gad, Naphtali. It is the two sons that were put at that level of giving out these inheritances at this time. They will be put at that level. We all know, you know, Israel, Jacob, loved Joseph. And when he went into captivity, he thought he was dead. And it was like such an amazing blessing when he got to see his son, Joseph. And to see his grandsons really was a blessing. And he was at that point of his life, he was ready to die, and he wanted to have his favorites for right there with him at that moment. Drop down to verse 16. This is Joseph speaking. No, this is Israel speaking. Verse 15 says, and he blessed Joseph. So Jacob blessed Joseph. And in verse 16 it says, the angel, Christ, who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. Not just bless Joseph, but bless these children, Ephraim and Manasseh. Let my name be named upon them, and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. He looks at those two grandsons and he's saying, I want them to grow into a multitude in this earth. And I have that because Abraham had it, and he passed it on to me. God told Abraham, your sons will be as the stars of heaven and the sands of the seashore. So he had that right to give it to somebody, and he gives it to the two sons of Joseph. But, so, verse 17. Now when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand, the prominent hand, on the head of Ephraim, who was the second born, it displeased Joseph. So he took hold of his father's hand to remove it from dead. And Joseph said to his father, "Not so, my son. Not so, my father. For this one here, Manasseh, is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head." But his father refused and said, Joseph might have thought he was just a little confused at this point. But this truly wasn't even, I don't believe it was really Jacob speaking to him. It was God moving him by his spirit to speak prophecy of the future. This, what was going to be said, given the setting that we live in here. But his father refused and said, "I know, my son, I know. He also, Manasseh also, shall become a people, and he also shall be great. He will become a great nation, America will. But truly Ephraim," which is England and the Commonwealth of Nations, "but truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations." Not just England, but those who come under the umbrella known as the Commonwealth of Nations. And we will see that as we go through it all. This verse brings out so much knowledge before its time. We're here in 2026. We can sit back and we can see it in the rearview mirror. We realize England did come before the United States. England, or Ephraim, came first before Manasseh. They formed what was called a multitude of nations, the British Commonwealth. And then Manasseh came second. And he was also supposed to be great, but not as great as Ephraim. And now that we look at it, and we look at what was said here in these two verses, that's an amazing prophecy to bring out that far in advance. How could that happen? God is amazing. Amazing. Well, you could say, well, that was just back in that time. Chapter 49, verse 1, just down a few verses. "And Jacob called his sons and said, gather together that I may tell you, all you 12 sons of Jacob, that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days." You know, you look at England that came into existence about 500 years ago, a little before that, but it's like even that's kind of the start of the last days when you're looking back that far. That goes way back there, 4,000 years or so, I suppose. But anyway, in it all, we see the greatness of God and how he works through those people. England came up from nowhere. It was a nothing nation in the start of the 1700s. And then they rose to power. In the end, they had this Commonwealth of Nations. And I should explain to you right now kind of the totality of that. We know that, you know, if you're looking at Britain, who else do you look at is in that Commonwealth? The first thing you think of is Canada up to the north. And if I better say it fast before Dave says something, but Australia is in that same ballpark. They were and still are in that brotherhood. And New Zealand we would put in there as well. But as time went by, as England grew and tried to develop a bond of trade and helping other nations to grow, other nations were included in that. India, South Africa. In the nation of Africa, there are several nations that the British colonized. Ghana, which we went to over the years for the feast. Nigeria. There's just a bunch of nations. And they became Christian nations, and they became part of that Commonwealth of Nations. Pakistan is also in there. There is a saying that says the sun never set on the British Empire because it was that expansive around the world. And it came from nowhere. Yeah, it didn't come from nowhere. It came from God is what it did. It really did. And America, 1700, was nothing. It wasn't there. It just was nobody. So, in it all, we see a prophecy here that at that moment, I don't think Jacob had a clue what he was saying. I don't think he understood it. But it was said through him by God, I think. You know, you start at the beginning of creation, when God created the earth. 2,000 years later, he comes down to this earth, and he looks at it, and he tries to find good people obeying him, and he finds none. In Genesis, you don't need to turn there. Genesis 6, verse 6, the Lord was sorry that he had made man, and he was grieved in his heart. He could only find one person that was obedient to God. One person. 2,000 years. And, of course, we know what happened. He got on the ark with his children and their mates and his wife. And God started all over. It says in verse 8 of that chapter, Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And after he got off of the boat, God told him to scatter, to fill the earth, because it's now void, and you need people out there to kind of keep the wild animals down and things like this and to expand. God wanted them to grow out, but they didn't. And Noah did what he could to be a good witness for God, but Ham, his son, was Cush, and Cush, the next in line, had a son named Nimrod. And Nimrod was a mighty hunter on the earth. He was something that was very influential. He influenced people real good. Influential. And he became an idol. And he really had that, he just had that pizzazz to him that he just was going to be a god to the people. And God came down and he realized how bad things were going to go in such a short period of time. And he decided to just change their languages. It's the only way to get them to move out. Once they were different languages, they needed to separate. They didn't want to be near these other people they couldn't understand. So they were spread out. But it tells you, if God didn't change directions, there would be nobody that would be obedient. 2,000 years and only one person? Two generations later and already it's going down the tubes? God had to work in another direction. And he did. He called Abraham. He was faithful and he worked with Abraham. And he worked with his son Isaac and he worked with his son Jacob. And he was going to form people, nations, who came from their very genealogies. And that is what Jacob is, the 12 sons of Jacob. They formed the nation of Israel. And then they became the nations of Judah and Israel. And they were to be examples to the world, to be that positive influence to the world. Genesis 22, verses 17 to 18. I'm going to take a look at that right now. Genesis 22. As Abraham was so obedient to God, was so willing to do whatever God told him to, a positive influence on the earth, so that in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. A tremendous blessing given to Abraham. And there are two ways to look at this word seed. In your seed, all the nations, as we looked in 1 Chronicles, the scepter promise was about Jesus Christ. and in through Jesus Christ, and his opening the door so all could have repentance and being the king of the in the millennium, and from that point on, we see seed of Jesus Christ, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Makes sense. They'll be given a chance. But also, and this is why I would have to perform this, I wouldn't put this on the same level as Jesus Christ, but put this out there, that the birthright would be a blessing to the world through Ephraim and through Manasseh. And that's where we're going to go today. We're going to look at what they did also. But they were going to help. You know, when you've got such a wicked world and it's going in such a wrong direction, influences, and God was going not to work with the whole world, he never did that, did he? But he worked with a small group, a group of nations, and at least was a move the earth in a positive direction. And we will see that as we go through it. First, we know about 400 years after this point that God led the children of Israel out of Egypt. And these were to be his people. These were the descendants of Jacob, the 12 tribes here together. And they went out and they formed a nation. Let's go to Exodus 19, verses 4 to 6. It will tell us God's plan, what God wanted from them. Now, they didn't obey as they should have, but this was God's initial plan for the Israelites. Exodus 19, verse 4. You have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself, God tells Moses. Now, therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be to me a special treasure, to me above all the peoples, for all the earth is mine. I'm going to make you, Israel, special, and you shall be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. God wanted them to be an example nation. The nations to look at them and say, they keep these laws, and look at how God has blessed them. Their prosperity, their ability to not let other nations come and destroy them. And it says of them that they were to be a kingdom of priests. What do priests do? Priests go teach the people and give them instruction in how to live in God's way of life. And God wanted them to be examples to the world, and to let the people know who could see how strong God was and what he was doing, to let the people know what it took to obey God. That was God's goal with them. And there were moments, and I think truly when they came out of Israel, out of Egypt, as a nation, that truly, I would imagine all the nations in the world knew exactly what had happened. The impossible dream that these people were able to escape, and how the waters rolled back. They saw the power of God, and there were at that times when God worked with them and they obeyed God. It worked out great. So they were an example. But of course, you know, there was the covenant which they broke. So it didn't go exactly the way God would have wanted it to. So as time turned out, it worked for them to a certain extent to be examples to the world, but not the way God would have wanted it to. As we get into the New Testament, God works with individuals in calling. And yet, there are nations in this world. There are nations with power to destroy and to conquer other nations. And yet God wanted nations who would do things that would be positive for the good of the world, to be focused on doing things not for themselves, not to be inward. And that's strange, isn't it, in the world today? But God needed people, nations that would look outward, do what's good, help other nations, so that this world could go the 6,000 years God planned for it to go. It only went 2,000 years and he had to start over. He had to go 6,000 years. And God needed an example, a physical, national example. We're going to look at now at Ephraim and Manasseh, America and England, and we're going to take a look at what God did with them. You go back to 1500. 1500, what was the world like? The Roman Empire had been around since before the return, since the birth of Jesus Christ. So it had, say, 1500 years. It had hit its peak. It had kind of come down quite a bit at that point. And in building this huge empire, this Roman Empire, that had lasted so amazingly long, they took the church, which was the Christian church, they made a church that was blended in with the Empire of Rome. There was paganism that they blended with Christianity, and they called it good, but it was pagan, and it got more pagan as they went down the line. And if you could sit back and just be dropped into that world, there were some Christians, but in a small group here or there, it wasn't much of anything. If you lived in that world, you would never see it. What you would see under the term Christianity was a Roman church. And teaching people that were so far gone from the truth, they had no idea. There was no Bibles in people's homes. Nobody had a Bible. The Bibles were in the temple. And the people in the Christian Roman church, they went there. And the Roman, the English wasn't a language they spoke. I mean, it was only up there in England, which was just a bunch of nobodies. The languages that they spoke, that was more Roman. And they had the Bible, which was written in Greek and Hebrew. But the translations were not really out there. And in the Roman church, in their services, they spoke in Latin. And even many people did not understand Latin. And I can remember as a kid in grade school, there was a fellow that was a part of that Roman church at that time. And they were having Latin services in the 1960s. That's hard to believe. But that's what they did. That's the way it was. And how could God get known when there was not even an English Bible? When there was nothing, and it was only within the temple that you were going to learn this. God had a huge undertaking to develop people to have knowledge, to be able to understand what was in that Bible. In 1611, in the early 1500s, the Protestant Reformation came around. And that was the group of people that were going against the Roman Church and forming what was called the Protestant denominations. And in that process, England seemed to be an area where it was expanding the most in that rebellion. And in 1611... the Pope of England, King James, and I truly believe that was inspired by God to King James to do this, King James ordered experts at the Hebrew language, experts at the Greek language, to come together, the thous and these and all this stuff. But if you look at the people that were there at the time and what they said about it, the King James Version of the Bible was amazing. It was so revealing. And King James wanted everyone to be able to have a copy of the Bible in their own hands. And him being a king, he could do things where so many others had no ability to be able to do it. You know, I don't know, it was 1400s or something when the printing press came into effect. Wasn't that much before this happened. But at the point, technology was there that they could start printing Bibles. I remember Melvin Rhodes being here. I know you old timers probably know Melvin Rhodes. He was a minister, been down in Africa and different places around the world, and he was British. He was a British descendant. Rhodes, when he came here, he said, when the people of England, they got their ability to get a hands on a Bible that was theirs in English, this was a dream come true to them. They thought this was the most wonderful thing. And they dove into the Bible, and they really were excited about it, and they were so happy. And it started a revolution. The churches of the Protestant churches that started, they had missionaries. And you know what? We know the truth. We've got it in English. We want to go to the rest of the world. Part of the expansion of the Commonwealth of Nations was the missionaries. Because these missionaries wanted to get this word of God out to the whole world. And they were excited about it. It was such a zeal that was in these people. And England, when it expanded to these Commonwealth of Nations, it wasn't about making them slaves under them. It was about giving them more freedom, giving their people a democracy so that the people didn't have a king that was going to lord it over them. It was to build a trade routes around the world so that goods that were bananas that were in one place could be moved to somewhere else. And all of these things, the trading of the world, could bond the world together. You know what? This moment at this time, God was making them a blessing to the world. Christianity came out in a different direction than it never could have done before. And the people got to read the Bible, and they were excited about the Bible. And the nations around the world were part of this confederation under England. And they could feel a sense of expansion to the world because, after all, England was getting to be great. And yes, this was started in the 1500s and 1600s, but it wasn't until the 1750 to 1800, that's where Britain hit its peak, where it grew. But why did it grow? Because God opened it up. Because they were a blessing to God. They were a blessing to the world that the truth was going out. And the people were excited. You know, I look at God's kingdom in the millennium, and there's going to be that excitement that these people had. Let's go back and keep your finger there in that area of Genesis and Exodus, but go back to Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah 2, of all the chapters, when you go to the Feast of Tabernacles, the one I'll guarantee you you're going to go into, it's Isaiah 2. Because it starts talking about the start of the millennium. And it talks about in Isaiah 2, verse 2, it talks about the attitude of the people that go up to Jerusalem. Many people shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways. We will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law, the Bible, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. They will be excited. They will know Jesus Christ was the same that got killed 2,000 years before. And they will know that he defeated the armies at the Battle of Armageddon. And these people will be excited. And they will say, we want to learn God's way. What a great moment in history that's going to be. But what a great moment in history it was when people got the Bible in their hands and they got to read it for themselves and to study it for themselves and to preach it to the rest of the world. That was a great moment. And it's going to be that way in the millennium as well. Go back to Genesis 48. Genesis 48, verse 19. Genesis 48. We were there before. I should have put a tab in my Bible. I didn't. 48, verse 19. No. Well, Genesis 48:19. But his father refused and said, "I know my son. I know he also shall become a people." Let's see. Why did I do this? Okay. He also shall become great, but truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall be a multitude of nations. So I wanted to bring up the fact that it wasn't just England, it was this multitude of nations, this grouping that was so great. Trade prospered around the world because of it. Governments had care for the people. And it was the nucleus of England that did it. And Christianity was spreading, true Christianity, not just something that was told to them from the people in the temple, but they read it from their own Bibles. It was a great, prosperous time. And it says that Ephraim shall be greater than Manasseh. Ephraim, or England, and the British Empire, at its peak, between 1750 and 1800, the British Empire was 5.5 times larger than the Roman Empire was. That's amazing. 4 times more people than the Roman Empire had. So it grew, and it was tremendous. And that was a big, it had really grown if you're taking in the totality of the Commonwealth of Nations. We won't turn back there, but Deuteronomy 33:17 says, the people of Ephraim and Manasseh, they are the ten thousands of Ephraim and the thousands of Manasseh. In other words, Ephraim's got its ten thousands and Manasseh has its thousands. So it is much bigger. Let's go now to Genesis 49 and start in verse 22. If you start in the very first part of Genesis 49, in verse 3, it talks about Reuben, first of all, and it calls him the firstborn, and there's blessings that are poured out, Simeon and Levi in verse 5. But in verse 22, you drop down there, it's the start of talking about Joseph and the blessings that will be poured out on them. Joseph is to be a fruitful bough by a well. His branches run over the wall. And we just read about, or I just explained to you about how Ephraim in its time of growth, its branches rain over the wall all the way to Australia, to Pakistan, to South Africa. Its branches ran over the wall and was an influence to the whole world. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, hated him, and quite honestly, as any nation that becomes the number one nation in the world was going to have enemies. And yet, it's not because of their strength. It's because of God's blessing that they managed to resist all the enemies that went after them. God gave them strength. Verse 24, but his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong. How? By the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. For there is the shepherd, Jesus Christ, the stone of Israel. God of blessings of the deep that lie beneath, blessings of the breasts and of the womb. God says, I'm going to bless you. The blessings of heaven above. Rain in due season. I say that, and today we had just a downpour out there. But rain in due season. And you know, God has blessed our nation. Great crops. The land that God gave us in this land. How much fertile land we have. That's a huge blessing. And God gave us this. We're looking at Joseph, so we're looking at England and America now. So I kind of want to focus on us as well. Blessings of heaven above. And the grains and things that we grow. Blessings of the deep. We've got iron. We've got oil. We could be an independent nation to ourselves if we really needed to be. And there are very few countries in this whole world that had that capability. Blessings of the breasts and of the womb. God is the one who makes fertility happen and things to grow. And as I look at this and I look at our nation, You know, we had World Wars I and II. And in those, Europe and Asia, there weren't too many nations that were. And it's tough. When you fight a war, you spend money on a battle, you destroy others, but they destroy you, and you lose so much. You lose so much to have to rebuild. Do you know what a blessing it is that America never had the wars of World War I and II come on our soil? That's an amazing blessing. That is a huge blessing, and it came from God. He's the one that devised it, so we're sitting in the middle between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. And even England is kind of out there. Australia is an island all its own. You look at the nations that God has blessed, and there's some protection that we've all been given. There's some blessings of fertile soil. There's natural resources that God has given us. And most importantly, His protection. The blessings of your father have excelled the blessings of many ancestors up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him who was separate from his brothers. And England and America have been separate from their brothers. We've kind of grown together as people, and it's amazing. Yes, Manasseh was Ephraim. They were brothers there, and yet England had Canada and Australia ended up becoming part of them, and they're there today. They look to the King and Queen of England as something special. America doesn't. You can argue one way or the other, but it's just fulfillment of Bible prophecy is what happened, that Manasseh was a separate from Ephraim. So England grew, prospered, and it went through World Wars I and II. It expended a lot of money, and in the end, it really didn't have the finances to maintain that Commonwealth of Nations. They really didn't. And at the end of World War II, America didn't spend too much time in that Second World War. We got in the middle or end of it. So we hadn't expended so much energy in it. And the English speakers, English nation, they told the American government, we can no longer be a blessing to the world. We can no longer do the job of being a world power. You folks, America, have maintained yourself through that Second World War. You have the capabilities to become the world leaders. Just what God said in Genesis 48, they would come second. And America at that moment, at that time, even though it hadn't grown that much, but everybody else was so flat on its back after the war, it made America great. But what happened? If we're going to become the blessing to the world, what did we need to do? We needed to finish that war, not with animosity, but with love and concern and dedication to rebuilding the world. Germany, you know, I guess you could say was the biggest cause of the problem. And they divided them into East and West. But they helped just form the government back and helped them financially. Japan had been destroyed. America stepped up and helped the Japanese financially. And the world was grateful for what America, France, England did. They were grateful. And I think it bonded the world together. Not to go to that Noah mentality where they were all going to destroy each other. It was showing the world that the descendants of Jacob were truly helpful and a blessing. And that was a good thing. And when it all got done, we had to look at the world and we have to say, World War I in the 19-teens, World War II started in 1940s, 30 years between world wars. And we had to say, what can we do to keep this from happening again? So the United States started the United Nations. Let's talk about things when we get into trouble. Let's not go out and fight each other. We started the United Nations. International Monetary Fund. Nations financially go broke, and they still do today, but there is a fund that is funded by the world nations, and in it will help nations that really get into trouble to rebuild their finances. I remember UNICEF was talked about helping the poor nations around the world. There's some African nations without help, without medicines to conquer some of the diseases that are spread so rapidly. You know, it just, nothing's going to get solved. The prosperous nations have been a blessing to the poorer nations, and there are always the aggressor nations, but America built a big military, but not to conquer, but to defend the individual nations that were doing right. And the aggressors, we push back at. Russia, China, they've always been that same mentality. And when they get into the millennium, it's called Gog and Magog, and they're going to be there again. But that's a mentality some nations have. But America has been the one to help out the poor. It has been a blessing to the world. And we give the alternative to the world to not be just out there, what can we grab from other people? But how can we work together and bond together, get rid of these weapons in the millennium? I just read Isaiah chapter 2, verse 2, or verse 3, I think it was. Now let's read Isaiah 2, verse 4. Isaiah 2, verse 4, the very next verse, because it's the start of the millennium. Isaiah 2, and verse 4. After it just talked about how, the people say, let's go up, let's learn of God's way, in verse 3. And in verse 4 it says, he shall judge between the nations. God will judge between the nations. There's aggressors, and there are people that get along with each other. He shall judge between the nations and rebuke many peoples. They shall beat their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation. Neither shall they learn war anymore. The aggressors are out there. America has been the protector for them and tried to bring it more of a let's get along together world. And that's exactly what's going to happen in the millennium. God's going to have to destroy the weapons, destroy those people that have been aggressors and can only think of killing other people. We got to get rid of that. We got to implement, let's get along together. Beat those swords into plowshares. Let's go out, farm the land, make prosperity, bond together. Here we are. The end, the 250th anniversary of the United States. I wanted this to end on a positive note. I mean, we can go negative. You always can go negative. We can do that. But I felt like on this anniversary day, I wanted to end on a positive note. Book of Genesis. It's a land of peace. It's a land of prosperity. And I think at this moment, on this anniversary day, we need to think about how God has blessed us.